Welcome to the History of the Saints podcast. My name is Glenn Rawson, series host. What you are about to listen to is an episode about the documentary history of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. This episode is one of more than 250 presentations from 1805 and the birth of Joseph Smith the Prophet through 1877 and the death of Brigham Young. This series interviews some of the finest scholars of our time and presents the latest in historical research and facts as it relates to early Latter-day Saint history. And it comes from the long-running, highly acclaimed television documentary series, History of the Saints. If you have a desire to learn the history in depth and detail, then this podcast is for you. Thank you for joining us.
My mother, who was a very pious woman and much interested in the welfare of her children, both here and hereafter, made use of every means which her parental love could suggest to get us engaged in seeking for our soul's salvation. She prevailed on us to attend the meetings, and almost the whole family became interested in the matter and seekers after truth. William Smith.
First settled in 1789. The first name? It was called Swift's Landing after its founder, General John Swift. And then in 1796, for interesting reasons, the name was changed to Palmyra. By the summer of 1816, Palmyra had grown. It was a thriving and a prosperous community. Word spread throughout New England that it was a good place to be. Land was cheap and fertile. Well, that word reached the Smiths, and they determined after the difficult time they had had in Vermont that they would go to Palmyra. Well, Father and Mother Smith settled their debts and prepared to go. And then in the late summer of 1816, with a man named Howard, Father Smith set out for Palmyra. Alvin and Hiram would walk down the road for a ways with their father accompanying him to say goodbye before they turned back. Father Smith reached Palmyra and settled in and went to work and soon sent word for his family to join him.
This winter of 1816-17, it was when they left as a family to go and rejoin their husband and father. And they're traveling in December of 1816 and arriving in Palmyra in January of 1817. Caleb Howard was sent back by Father Smith to bring them on, but Caleb Howard turned out to be a ne'er-do-well who took the money which Father Smith had given him and used it up with alcohol and even tried to steal the wagon, and Mother Smith grabbed the reins and called witnesses, and it was decided by him that maybe he wouldn't pursue that further, and he was happy to escape with his life, I think. But they arrived in Palmyra.
The joy I felt in throwing myself and my children upon the care and affection of a tender husband and father doubly paid me for all I had suffered. The children surrounded their father, clinging to his neck, covering his face with tears and kisses that were heartily reciprocated by him, Lucy Mack Smith.
They rented a little home on West Main Street, right where Stafford Street taps into Main Street. A little home owned by Samuel Jennings, a merchant in Palmyra, was able to negotiate and arrange for that. He did let his family know that he was ready for them to come.
They had a family home evening. where they sat down and tried to determine what their circumstances were. They had very little money. They were penniless, in fact, but she determined that she would use her oilcloth paintings to advantage, and we found that she didn't come unprepared with that, that she had been painting oilcloth coverings in New England and back in Vermont days, and so this was not new to her. By her own exertions, she began to replenish their supplies and their furniture.
They set up a cake and beer shop at the east end of the village, and it did a pretty brisk business, according to historians, until, at least for the young people. Joseph Jr. became the master of a handcart, which his father and supposedly brother Alvin had created, and would take goods, baked goods and gingerbread, like gingerbreads and boiled eggs and what some folks say is root beer, but homemade beer through the village on muster days, voting days, and sell that.
Significant documents have recently been discovered that shed light on the Smiths in Palmyra.
Recently, within the year, a record was found of a schoolmaster from Macedon, the village some 4 to 5 miles to the west of Palmyra Village. The schoolmaster was a chap named Philander Packard, and wonderful to find, but Joseph Smith Sr. sent children to school. Now, it's insightful that the Smith children attended school less than any others in that school district that particular term, or less than any other of the districts where it shows Philander Packard teaching. It wasn't necessarily expensive to go to school, but it did cost. And any means that would take away from the family's need to provide for themselves would be a challenge. But the school record verifies that because of the limited school activity of the Smith children, it fits Joseph Smith's statement that it required the effort of every family member to provide for ourselves, to make our way. Therefore, I had little opportunity to go to school and learned only the rudiments of reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Another discovery is that of a January 1819 court case there in Palmyra. It seems that Father Smith and Alvin had purchased a team of horses. That team had failed. A complaint was filed with the local justice of the peace, and the case was brought to court. The jury eventually found in favor of the Smiths and awarded them the judgment. What's interesting to us is two other facts. First, Joseph Jr., only 13 years of age, was considered by the court a credible witness in the case. The second thing, this court case clearly establishes against all critics that Joseph was indeed where he said he was in 1820. For about a year and a half after first coming to Palmyra, the Smith family lived right there in town. All of their efforts were toward buying land. The men hired themselves out as day laborers. They ran a refreshment stand. Everything went towards that goal. And then by 1819, they had moved out of the town of Palmyra and were down Stafford Road living in a cabin.
In 19, they're down the Stafford Road, and they had built a log cabin on property owned by a man by the name of Samuel Jennings, undoubtedly with his permission, but in effect, they were squatters on the land. Whether there was any rental associated with that initially or not, they were there on the Samuel Jennings property.
You can see the Smith family building and developing their property and living and become acquainted with the neighbors. They traded work with various other farm families, such as the Staffords, possibly the Stoddards. Staffords would have worked with them on occasion. People came over and enjoyed maple sugar candy that the Smiths and tapping their trees and boiling it, so a lot of good things went on. There were bees and dances and whatever. One young lady described young Joseph as he grew up as the life of the party, and she let later Mormon women know that she had danced with their prophet.
There was undeveloped land all around Palmyra, and the Smiths now found their situation sufficiently improved to buy land. So they contracted for 100 acres at $100 a year payment for a purchase price of about $600 to $700. That land lay just south of the cabin over the township line in what would come to be called Manchester Township.
The Smiths, going down to Canandaigua to the land office, came in contact with a fellow named Seymour, and he seems to be the one who arranged with the Evertsons for the Smiths to acquire that land, and who maybe spoke in their favor that, yes, they're a family with quite a number of boys who are growing up and will make a good workforce. And the Smiths negotiate to buy the land, according to William, for $100 a year. And that's not a small amount. Your farm crops have to be turned to specie to pay your land bills. Unless you've arranged for it, folks are not accepting bushels of grain and stuff as land payment. You have to turn it to money and have that in hand to pay. So it was not an easy thing to make that kind of money.
The typical purchase of a farm took about 3 or 4 years, and you had ownership, and you put a lot of sweat equity into cutting down the trees, building the fences. And William Smith said once, "My brother's supposed to be nothing but a money digger." He said if you had come out on the farm, he wouldn't even talk to you because he'd be out chopping trees. So that was the younger brother's perspective on what was happening.
As my father's worldly circumstances were very limited, we were under the necessity of laboring with our hands, hiring out by day's work and otherwise, as we could get opportunity. Sometimes we were at home and sometimes abroad, and by continuous labor were enabled to get a comfortable maintenance. Joseph Smith, Jr.
Lucy brought with her from New England the talent of painting oilcloth. She would take basic muslin or some other cloth and lacquer it, turn it into what we used to call oilcloth, and she said people would use that for the covers of little stands around the house. And so Lucy says, "I soon was able, through my work, to outfit our house with furniture, and we had a reasonable living."
In that first year on their new farm, the Smiths cleared 30 acres of that heavily forested land, which is quite an accomplishment. And, as always, they worked hard because the payment on that land loomed large.
Alvin goes to his father and he says, "Father, you take charge of the farm. I'm going to go abroad and see if I can earn the money for the rest of the first payment and all of the second." Now, if they're paying $100 a year, let's just say that a partial payment that they had made was $50. So if they owe $50 besides another $100 for the second payment, $150, that's an extraordinary amount of money. But from looking at the possibilities of where Alvin may have gone to work, and I find records in the Erie Canal sources that suggest a person could make 75 cents a day in board and room. Now, I think that that's a good possibility. If Alvin did that, it would have taken him the whole canal season from about April until November to make $150.
2 years from the time we entered Palmyra, strangers, destitute of friends or home or employment, we were able to settle ourselves upon our own land in a snug, comfortable, though humble habitation, built and neatly furnished by our own industry. And if we might judge by any external manifestation, we had every reason to believe that we had many good and affectionate friends, for never have I seen more kindness or attention shown to any person or family than we received from those around us. Our hearts glowed with gratitude to God for the manifestations of His favor that surrounded us. Lucy Mack Smith.
A few years back, History of the Saints began production of 7 seasons of a documentary television series titled History of the Saints. Season 1, Foundations of the Restoration. Season 2, Joseph Smith's Kirtland. Season 3, From Pentecost to Persecution, The Missouri Years. And Season 4, Joseph Smith's Nauvoo. Then 3 more seasons telling the story of Brigham Young and the Saints, beginning with the Nauvoo Exodus in 1846, titled Gathering to the West, then Building Zion, and finally, The Kingdom Endures. Altogether, over 100 hours of Latter-day Saint pioneer history. For these and all of History of the Saints books and DVD products, visit us at historyofthesaints.org.
religion mattered a great deal to the Smith family. There came a moment in 1803 that was telling for Lucy. She became so ill that the doctors gave her up.
My husband came to my bed and caught my hand and exclaimed as well as he could amid sobs and tears, "Oh, Lucy, my wife, you must die. The doctors have all given you up and all say you cannot live." I looked to the Lord and begged and pleaded with the Lord that He would spare my life, that I might bring up my children and comfort the heart of my husband. I covenanted with God, if He would let me live, I would endeavor to get that religion that would enable me to serve Him right.
She pleaded with the Lord as a young married woman that she would devote her life to being a good mother and transmit her family's values if she could be spared. And by morning, all around her knew that something had happened because she was getting well instead of going away. And Lucy at that time looked around. She felt that the ministers that she had met were fairly insipid, more interested in being polite than they were to give her a vital and believing religion.
I was almost in total despair, and with a load of grief and troubled spirit, I returned, saying in my heart, "There is not on earth the religion which I seek. I must again turn to my Bible."
She finally found somebody and made a deal with this minister that if he would baptize her, but not require her to attend his church, she wanted to be baptized. So that's where she started out as a seeker.
Lucy, I think the record suggests, was baptized right there in Palmyra. In New England, she had had that challenging time and sought God and covenanted with Him that whether through the Scriptures or whether from heaven, she would seek the truth of the gospel. And she felt that she needed to be baptized, and she says it was months and years later. And in fact, she said it was when her oldest son was 22. So if that's a correct record, Alvin at age 22, that would have been 1820.
Joseph Smith Sr. cared a great deal about religion, and like so many others, he was affected by the revivals that happened around him. He cared deeply for religion and seeking after the truth. All of that would have a profound impact on his son, Joseph Jr.
Joseph Smith Sr. was very skeptical. In fact, he really was upset with organized religion and made no pretense about expressing that view. And I think this obviously would carry on to his son and to others in his family, this wondering about why isn't there something more vital and living and vibrant in the religious landscape. And so he was not affiliated with any church. And in that sense, as far as institutional religion, we can say, well, he's not very religious. But in fact, in a deep spiritual sense, he was a very religious person. One of the gifts he had was the gift of dreaming meaningful dreams.
And when Lucy Smith writes her biography, she gives seven dreams that he had had from their late New England days until the time that they moved to New York, and the last one was 1819. And these dreams would all be trying to find the truth.
"I thought a man came in with a peddler budget on his back. He spoke to me saying, 'Sir, will you trade with me today? I have always called on you, and I have found you strictly honest in all your dealings. And now I have come to you to tell you that this is the last time that I shall ever call. And there is but one thing lacking pertaining to your soul's salvation.' I then requested him to write upon paper what it was that I lacked. He said he would do so, and I sprang forward very eagerly in order to get some paper and other materials for writing. And in my excitement, I awoke. Joseph Smith, Sr.
And so, in my view, the Lord is preparing Joseph Smith, Sr., who so readily believed his son.
Joseph Sr. and Lucy Mack Smith differed a great deal in their religious views. Lucy would eventually join the Presbyterian Church, but Joseph Sr. would keep himself aloof from organized religion. Now, all of that being said, that does not mean that they were not, in practice, a religious family. They were.
We always had family prayer since I can remember. I well remember Father used to carry his spectacles in his vest pocket. And when us boys saw him feel for his specs, we knew that was a signal to get ready for prayer. After the prayer, we had a song we would sing. My parents, father and mother, poured out their souls to God, the donor of all blessings, to keep and guard their children and keep them from sin and from all evil works. William Smith.
Joseph took the best of what they could offer and asked God what was missing and got an answer. He lived in a home which was a religious home, which prepared him for seeking and praying and getting an answer. And I think that the environment, the general history of the period, combines with the family history of seeking to bring Joseph to the peak of asking God, wanting an answer, which was the answer not only of one family, but of generations of people who had sought the best in religion. And the Lord gave that great answer to a great prophet prepared, but a family prepared who had produced a man who loved the Lord indeed.
Joseph never said many words upon any subject, but always seemed to reflect more deeply than common persons of his age upon everything of a religious nature.
The first Great Awakening took place in the year 1740 in the United States. America would come alive to religion. In 1803, a revival spirit caught on and spread in Connecticut and Vermont. This was part of the Second Great Awakening. In 1817 and 1818, revivals came into the area of Palmyra. The Smith family attended. They were seekers. They wanted to know. These revivals would have a profound impact on young Joseph Jr. They awakened within him a yearning for God. That's our story next time. I'm Glenn Rawson, and we'll see you then.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information on what you have listened to, please go to historyofthesaints.org. The History of the Saints team that produced this podcast has also produced numerous books and full-length documentaries on early Latter-day Saint church history and the key figures that made that history. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
This podcast of History of the Saints has been produced by Dennis Lyman and Glenn Rawson. History of the Saints is a 501c3 nonprofit organization.